Hello and welcome to the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast. And I am back with Sam Roberts. Sam, we missed a week last week. We had a very busy week. We
got
a very
half-term. Busy week. Everyone had a half-term, busy half-term week. We just, and I tell you what didn't happen, listener, is that we didn't make a mistake and forget in some shape or form that we needed to record another episode. That's not what happened, is it, Sam? No, absolutely not.
Not at all. We did produce, we had Gavin Thomas on, who you could listen to on Monday.
He was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But and that probably is the blame. Gavin's to blame. We will blame Gavin. He made us think that we'd recorded loads because we could have spoken to him about absolutely everything. But yeah, do listen to that. What an absolute gent of a man, and still going. And if you're down in Sussex and near a rugby club, turn up and you might see him. So there you go.
Probably quite likely to see him, I think, at this point. Well, we are going to be previewing the Autumn Internationals today. I think Autumn International adjacent, shall we briefly touch on Hackergate? I'm kind of loath to call it that because it almost gives it more credence than it's worth, the conversation that's being had at the moment. But I guess just to fill in some of the blanks and give people a very, very brief overview. Obviously, the hacker or similar war dances are done by Tonga, Fiji, New Zealand, Samoa before their international test matches. It's always the last thing after the anthems. In terms of what you can do to it, that's kind of varied over time. So at some points, we think back to 2011 when France kind of stood up to the hacker and advanced on it. Ireland, of course, I think it was in Chicago where they kind of formed the eight after Anthony Foley had passed away, a couple of years after that. There was other famous ones. England have advanced on it. I can't remember exactly when that was, but that is...
Brian Moore and Norm Hewitt squaring up to each other. Absolutely brilliant. The V in the smirking, Owen Farrell smirking at the V in the 2019 World Cup. There are a few. Did you see Jamie Wall's tweet about why you can't and why you can't advance on it? It's to do with World Rugby, and it's to do with a camera shot. World Rugby want a camera shot every match of end on. So that wonderful camera shot where the middleman is right in front of the camera and you get the hacker sort of splayed out in front of you. So World Rugby don't allow the opposition to advance because they want a camera shot. Now, doesn't that sum up exactly where we are in rugby at the moment? PR and marketing is far more important than actually the whole point of what the hacker is. And I understand from speaking to New Zealanders, they love it. They love that advance, that sort of... They don't want disrespect, of course, but they love that they're throwing down a gauntlet. They want the other person to pick up the gauntlet. Absolutely, absolutely. And it should be part of it, absolutely. But you, I think, are going to talk about dear old Joe Marler, aren't you, in a sense, and what he did there.
Yeah, so he's got himself in a little bit of hot water. He's talked about wanting to... I think the quote was, it should get in the bin or be put in the bin. Now, I think whenever you listen to anything Joe Marler says, you have to have a fairly large amount of sodium next to you to sprinkle on it, because he is, I would say, so I quite like Joe Marler, but he is a misguided entertainer some of the time. Yeah. I think some of the time he is actually very smart, and in some ways he's produced this generation we have of people who are willing to be a little bit more open about speaking about various things, and he spoke about some important stuff in the past, and he is the opposite of what we sometimes get, which is those drone like players who really can't speak and have very little to say. Or very little they're willing to say. And I think, obviously, Joe Marler is the absolute opposite
Joe is an incredible brain. If you spend any time around Joe, you notice that he has an insatiable hunger for humor and for comedy, and he loves to poke fun at all sorts of manner of things. He is constantly thinking. He is actually a little bit like, and I've spent a little bit of time around top-ranking comedians, and they're a little bit like that. They are constantly on that precipice of looking for funny. And he is like that. He's got that razor sharp mind, often very self-deprecating, often taking the mick out of a number of different people. And he's constantly like that. The problem, and if you spend time with comedians, you'll find this. The problem is that the dark side of this, the nastier side of the precipice, is very present as well sometimes. And he falls and occasionally stumbles down that side of it. And it's a really fine line to tread. Now, that's part of Joe and his personality. And he, you know, we could, you know, spend a while regaling the rap sheet for Joe Marler. But if you look at every single one of the times that he's found himself in it, he's right on the line. He's right on the line. And also, and people will probably be shouting and saying, well, he was also quite offensive. But he's right on the line of offensive as well. So when he speaks and when he says things, what he said to Samson Lee, or what he did to Alan Wynne Jones, all of these different things are right on the line of where it needs to be. And sometimes he falls foul of it, and sometimes he suffers. And nobody suffers more than Joe Marler, and I mean that. No, nobody really does. And people will be saying, "Oh, go on, Sam, cry me a river." But this is a man, and again, in the comedic world, there are a lot of similarities between these guys who are very close to that sort of fall. And Joe, we need to be careful with him. Yes, you know, you mentioned characters there. The game is crying out for characters, and yet as soon as a character comes along, we squash him, or we jump on him, or we say that he's this, that, and the other, and we send him packing. And this is what I worry a little bit with where Joe Marler is. The latest is that he's left England camp. It's got nothing to do with anything, but he shut down his account as well, his Twitter account, and he's just sort of disappeared off. And my thoughts are with him, and I hope he's okay. And you know, in answer to his question, he does have a point in a way that this hacker is like really advantageous to the New Zealanders or to whoever is doing the Samoans or the Tongans. It really gets them in the mood. And so, yeah, if you don't have your own war dance, you'd be a little bit annoyed that someone's got a war dance to really get them in the zone and get them, you know, in the place. I think, you know, how you react to it and how you use it is something that you need. We need the opposition need to be able to do something about it. And yeah. I think that's the point that he's kind of making. If they're going to do this, and if they're going to get themselves into this zone with this, then England or whoever is playing the All Blacks need to have something that they can fire back. And I think that's fair. I absolutely think that's fair. And something needs to be done about that. That's my thoughts on it. What do you reckon, Sam?
Yeah, so I agree. I think I would have a slightly different take perhaps on his... I think the Alan Wynne Jones and the Samson Lee things were quite a long way past what was okay. I think the problem for Marler is that he ends up in this situation where he is so often close to the line, which I think is fine. Like I have no issue with that. And to be honest, I have no issue with his comments about the hacker. I think that if you want people to speak their mind, you can't then chastise them when they speak their mind in this way. You know, either you want him to say what he thinks. And it's not, I don't think it's particularly insulting. I mean, it's maybe not the language.
It's
I
not new. Use. It's not new either. It's not the first person.
Exactly. Exactly. I think the other stuff you look at it and go, yeah, I can't really defend that as a guy being a character. And I think if when you spend time in rugby clubs, like generally, I think rugby clubs have changed drastically in the 14 or so years I've been playing. But certainly back in the day when I spent time in rugby clubs, you would see a lot of people who, this was obviously before Joe Marler, but you'd see a lot of people who were basically prototype Joe Marlers, but without any of the actual wit. And so you end up with these people who were just kind of lowest common denominator targeting and just not actually very funny. Yeah. And then Joe Marler comes along. I think a lot of those people see themselves in him and see... and think, oh, yeah, okay, this is licensed to just be rude and kind of offensive, but actually that's not really what he's doing. You know, most of the time he's using humor to kind of make a broader point. But on this point, I think people find it very hard to have a reasonable conversation. I put a tweet out last night. My basic feeling is, should it continue? You know, should the hacker continue? Yeah. I mean, people love it. I remember the first time I watched a New Zealand game was Wales, New Zealand, I think in 2021 or 2022. And I was so excited about watching the hacker. I hadn't really thought about it until I was there. And I thought, bloody hell, I'm actually going to see it. I've never seen it before. And so that was hugely exciting. So that on that part, that's great. On the
you're absolutely right. Should it continue? Should there be a response? Should there be allowed to be a response, you know, from the opposition? And should World Rugby get their cameras out the way? Yes, I agree with that bit as well.
Yeah, yeah, and I also agree with people should be able to sing in the crowd. That there shouldn't be. I think you can get too po-faced about this kind of stuff, and just. Who's it hurting? You know, yes, sing along to it. Sing Jerusalem. Do whatever you want to it. And yes, you can still do it. I think the atmosphere in Cardiff when Wales stood to the hacker and didn't move. I still go back and watch that video.
Oh, I remember screaming at the camera saying, "Don't!" I used some language. I said, "Don't move! Don't move! Don't be the people that move." And that still gives me goosebumps remembering that whole thing of who was going to blink first. Basically, it was absolutely wonderful. That is perhaps my favorite hacker moment, I have to say. Just briefly on Joe Marler, you're right. I'm not excusing the Samson Lee and Alan Wynne Jones, but we get a pile on and people saying, you know, you're allowing it. I don't agree with it. Does it happen in rugby fields? And are there things that happen around with that? Yes. Are they picked up on microphones and cameras? No. You know, that was also part of it. Joe hadn't thought that through, hadn't recognized that these things were going to come back and come back to bite him in a big, big way. So, you know, I suppose that's where I am. I'm always trying to find sympathy with the human. That's who I am. That's where I am. And I'm not defending those situations that he's done. I'm not excusing them. I'm not saying they should have happened in any shape or form. But at the same time, all of your points as regards the human and the character that is trying to come out here. And we've got to look after everyone, you know, even when they're wrong. And Joe Marler was wrong. We still got to look after him, and we still got to make sure that he knows what he's doing.
Absolutely. I think there's a broader point to be made as well about, you know, Marler's side. The fact is, as a professional rugby player now, everything you do is looked at, and everything you do or say is focused on. So you could completely understand. I mean, I don't know if you've listened to Cole Palmer being interviewed. Yeah. It's incredibly tedious. You watch him play, and he is absolutely brilliant. But
you watch him being interviewed, just dreadful.
Yeah. And you think, well, maybe it's just his personality, but also you think, I kind of understand it, because if you say, I think we were good back there, you will get some high-profile journalist will write an article next day saying how he's too cocky, he needs to be, you know, he needs to be taken down a peg, he'll never make it for England if he continues thinking the game's all about him. And then, you know, you'll have a load of people following what that person says. And so... You can't expect to have people give better interviews than Cole Palmer does if any time they do, it's leapt on. And I do think that's a worry that we have in the game, where there's just so much of a lack of nuance that as soon as someone says anything where you think, well, that's interesting, that's quite a good point, you just know the next day there's going to be, or later that night, Twitter is going to be ablaze with people furious, and there will be headlines in, you know, less salubrious journals.
Do you know what breaks my heart is footballers covering their mouths when they speak to each other on the pitch, and I mean that. So I completely understand why they're doing it, and I don't want them not to do it, but what breaks my heart is the fact that they're doing it because of the fact that people have, you know, employed lip readers to try and find out what they're saying to each other, and that bit of our world and that bit of our need to invade and find out and want to be part of stuff. And that's slightly galling for me that we find ourselves in a world which is like that. And you know, if for instance a footballer didn't cover their mouth and said something, it would be all over the back pages, and that player's career would be, you know, in tatters if he had referred to another player in a certain way, you know, derogatory or whatever. And you know, that's human. We are I mean, we're all human. We all say things in the heat of the moment. We all say things. We all have opinions. We all have, you know, ideas, and that's what's tricky. That's what's difficult. And when rugby players start covering their mouths, we're going to be in trouble. But maybe Joe Marler will be the first to do that.
Yeah, perhaps. I wouldn't be surprised if he takes a particular approach to these Autumn Internationals. And talking of Autumn Internationals, let's talk about the Autumn Internationals, Sam.
Indeed.
I thought what we could do is I've got the games here for Wales, for England, Ireland, and Scotland.
Yeah,
we can go maybe a little bit further depending on time. I thought we could have a look at what constitutes success for each of these nations, and maybe a little bit of a prediction on what you think might happen in these games. We can start with Wales. So not this weekend, but next, I think, or maybe the one after that.
Next weekend,
The 10th of November, we've got Wales against Fiji.
Yeah.
The week after, we have Wales, Australia, which I will be at. And then to cap it off, we've got Wales, South Africa on the 23rd of November. So obviously Wales not having a great time of it at the moment. When you look at those, what do you think is a reasonable outcome, or an outcome where Wales can say, yeah, we're making progress here?
I first of all, I think those fixtures are absolutely ace for Wales. I really do. I think those are a great set of fixtures in a sense of you know, the order of them, and to a certain extent an opportunity in which to build. This is where Wales are at the moment. They're trying to find out a lot about a lot of players at the moment and trying to continue to go in the right direction. I think that Fiji game will be just as good as it sounds. It's a repeat of the clashes in the World Cup. Fiji are an absolute force to be reckoned with. Of course, with Fiji playing them first up, we might get a little disjointed Fiji. Sometimes when they come together, they can sometimes be a little bit disjointed. I'd be really worried if they were playing them last, for instance, and Fiji had played all their games and really got into each other's pockets. That's a really dangerous Fiji side. But I think that would be a really, really good test. I think Australia is a fantastic test. Funnily enough, not a dissimilar profile of international pedigree coming together there. Wales and Australia very much in the same sort of area, the same sort of boat. And then South Africa being the ultimate test for anyone in the world at the moment. I would say, as a Welshman, I would say if we won two out of three, I'd be really, really happy, bearing in mind those two that I think are Fiji and Australia. I would like to see a performance against South Africa. If they beat South Africa, I would be over the moon. But I think that's where I'd want to be. Anything less than that, genuinely, I think Wales will be a little bit annoyed. But that all depends on how Fiji and Australia turn up, to be fair. So that's my thoughts. Agree roughly?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot rides on that first match, because realistically we're not going to beat South Africa. So that first match, I think, win there against Fiji, and you're right, on the road, and you're thinking, okay, well, at least we got one. At least we're not in the position where we got none. So let's have a hit out against Australia now. And then when you beat Australia, then you're thinking, well, we may as well make it 3 out of 3. Like, yeah, there's really nothing to lose now.
Absolutely.
I think also performance-wise, I think there needs to be an element of stability at fly half, I think, which given how he's playing this season, I expect Gareth Anscombe to give if he's given the nod. I would also say a more solid scrum, because I think that's been a big concern. There's something kind of special going on in Welsh rugby at the club level at the moment. It's just got to be harnessed, I think, and brought into the international game. Which I think is easier said than done.
Yeah, 100%. Where should we go next? What
Let's go to England, shall we? England got four games. They've got New Zealand, obviously, this weekend. We talked to that one. Some length about that. Are you off to that one?
Well, yeah, I'm working out at Twickers, and I'm rather hoping to squeeze in if there's space. Not that there will be, but I'm rather hoping. Yeah, I'm working down at Twickers for all four internationals, so I'm very lucky. Sorry, I've just said Twickers there. I realised that absolutely no one will understand where I'm talking about. I meant the Allianz Stadium. See, so I'm just bringing everyone up to speed as to where I was going. People probably thought I was off somewhere else, but I'm off to the Allianz Stadium.
Out of interest, Sam, when you say you're working there, what does that look like? What does a day look like at the Allianz?
Hospitality-wise, so it starts quite early with copious amounts of alcohol and food and goes all the way through, and then they go and watch the match, stagger down the A316 towards the... Because my hospitality is actually taking place at the Twickenham Stoop. So the Twickenham Stoop hosts it, and then they stumble over the road, and then they stumble back and have a curry afterwards. It is a long, old day, full of camaraderie and joking and general English red rosing. It's tough. It's tough going, Sam. It's
best
it's
person a tough... you've ever had at hospitality.
I mean they're all pretty good. We've had. In terms of a player, you mean?
I guess in terms of person who you thought, I would like to spend more time in their company.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've spent a bit of time with Tom Wood. He's great. He's just the plainest, straightest talking individual ever. He's really, really good, and you know, 50 caps and you know, just Eddie Jones's Samson. I love speaking to him. There's a few. Ashley's great. There's some good people around it. My real takeaway is how do I put this? Some of the people who come along to this, and they pay a lot of money to come and sit in these hospitality, and it always pains me, and it certainly pains someone like Tom Wood, as we go round and we talk to these tables and introduce ourselves, and they say, "And what do you do, Tom?" And he goes, "Well, I used to play for England." "Oh, did you? All right, fantastic." And they have absolutely no idea about rugby, but they've come along and spent, you know, four figures on a ticket to come and watch it, and that's quite brutal, I suppose. But there we go. That's the way of the world, isn't it? Really,
that is the way of the world. Yeah. Well, so you'll be at that one. You'll be at all of these, as you say. Yep. So England, New Zealand, then England, Australia, England, South Africa, and England, Japan to wrap it up, which will be added significance with the Eddie Jones factor.
Yeah, another great set of fixtures, and exactly what England need. I would suggest that England would really like to have four out of four at home, and they will fancy their chances if they are able to get it together. And I think it's as exciting an England team as I've seen in a while that they're putting out against the All Blacks. I would have thought that they would hope that things go their way and that they can beat and work their way into a place to beat the Springboks in a few weekends' time. So that for me is four out of four. Interestingly, when I did it, we spoke to Israel Dagg a few weeks ago, when I did his radio show, I asked them the question, what would the All Blacks want from their tour? And they also said four out of four. So you know, the level of expectation in New Zealand rugby is huge. Now, I think New Zealand are there for the taking, but not just by England, by other sides as well. There are a few fixtures that we'll get onto them, but there are a few fixtures that are missing, I think, from the sort of autumn internationals, and one of them is France. Or is it France? Or I don't think France play the All Blacks.
I think that they do some point. Let me see if I can quickly pull this up.
Yeah,
they're on the 16th of November. I think it's a Friday night game.
Well, then do Ireland play the All Blacks, or do Ireland play South Africa?
So Ireland do play the All Blacks on the 8th of November.
And do they play South Africa? Is it South Africa? Africa? And do France not play South Africa either?
So France do not play South Africa.
Yeah, so South Africa have sort of sidestepped Ireland and France. That was the thought I had. Sorry, I haven't got my fixtures up in front of me. So yeah, there's a couple that are missing there, but other than that, they're all covered. I think All Blacks are there for the taking, certainly by England, and potentially if they get roughed up and you know, feel a little bit low on confidence, potentially by other teams as well. So, yeah, I will be very, very interested to see how it goes. I think that's a great set of fixtures, but 4 out of 4 for me for Twickenham. I think England and where Steve Borthwick is, I think that's what he'll want.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating team that England have put out. There's so much young, exciting talent in there. So I won't go through the whole list, but Marcus Smith at 10, Faye Wabosso on one wing, Furbank at 15, who I feel is just growing in the last 18 months into someone absolutely extraordinary. Tommy Freeman on the other wing, Chandler Cunningham South making a start at 6, George Martin also making a start in the second row.
Shall I tell you what's interesting also is I have a little bit of access to players and have a few conversations along the way and through contacts. I have contacts with players. All the players thought that that Van Portfleet was going to get the start at 9. All the players wanted Spencer to start. And this is what's interesting about Steve Borthwick. I don't think we used to get this with Eddie Jones. Steve Borthwick does have the propensity to surprise you sometimes with picking people. And he, you know, and who's on the bench at 9? Harry Randall.
Yeah.
And it's, I would have bet money. You would have got a lot of money off me, Sam. If you'd said Jack Van Portfleet will be in that 23, I would have said he would be. Because you fall into this sort of old Leicester Tigers cliche. But he's not, and he's picking players who I'm quite excited by. It quite excites me. I'm not a, you know, a serious England fan. We've spoken about exactly where my loyalties lie. I am invested in the England team. I want them to do well for the good of the English game. So I'm not anti them, but it's I was quite surprised. I was quite reassured by that. Were you, in a sense, that you were like, oh, well, he's actually gone with Spencer?
Yeah, I think that the bowling Borthwick stuff has been true for about a year.
Yeah.
And I think this is more of that proof that he's not the kind of the Leicester Tigers coach. He has got a much bigger toy box here than he is willing to pick it out. I think Richard Wigglesworth as well, you know, he was obviously part of that in Leicester, but he's clearly expecting or looking for different things. And I think that's really exciting if you're an England fan. To be honest, I like watching them nowadays. I find them a fascinating team and one that I'm quite fond of. Obviously, I hate them the day and the season following day that Wales play them, but generally, I think that I'm excited by them.
Yeah, absolutely. And a good set of fixtures. Who should we go to Ireland next?
Let's go to Ireland. So opening their account against New Zealand, then Argentina, Fiji, and then closing against Australia.
Yeah, again, another good set for them. I can't really see that they would not want 4 out of 4 from there. If it all goes well for them, effectively, for many people, still, you know, one of the best sides in the world alongside France and South Africa. That they've, you know, on their day at the Aviva, you've got to fancy them, haven't you? And I would have said that they are probably looking down the barrel of those four fixtures and saying 4 out of 4, please. I mean, that's really where they are. And you know, Northern Hemisphere rugby is in a good place. And I think at the moment that would be a sign of where they are. If England can win 4 out of 4 and Ireland can win 4 out of 4, wow, there's a real shifting of the balance, isn't there, on the hemispheres?
There is, yeah. I think also it would be, it's interesting because we spoke about England in one of our first episodes because it was off the back of the summer tests where they had lost both games but by a combined 8 points. And so you feel like it's so hard to know because obviously the Northern Hemisphere have the advantage in the north, Southern Hemisphere have the advantage in the south. And so you really do feel like you need that clean sweep in your hemisphere to be a sign, especially for the really big nations, to be a sign of progress. I think with Ireland, one of the interesting things here is that it's not quite that it gets easier afterwards, but I would say that the All Blacks, if you win that, then
that's their peak, isn't it?
The opening one. I say that if you can do that, then your odds on to then sweep the other nations, I think, because it's so hard to know which Argentina and Fiji will be able to show up. Obviously, the player availability and who they can get in these autumn tests is not always consistent. So I hope for their sakes that they can put on really good games. I think Argentina as well have the potential to be quite exciting.
Oh yeah, 100%. And sorry, you know, if that makes it sound, me saying 4-4 makes it sound glib and arrogant. It's not at all. In the same way that we're saying this, I'm also saying that you know, a game of rugby and the way that it's played can go. And these games will be tight. These will not be easy walk in the parks for anyone. And respect to, you know, teams like Fiji who might see themselves as perhaps not as blockbuster as South Africa or New Zealand or Australia, but they are. They're going to give these teams, Argentina are going to give Ireland an absolute runaround. And if you get it wrong, if you get the wrong anticipation, if you underestimate Argentina in any shape or form, they have already shown this year that they are capable of turning sides over, and they can do that. They absolutely can do that. Scotland, I find a really, really fascinating. Put your Scottish hat on and tell us about who they face.
So I think this is a fascinating set of fixtures, and something I think that Scotland have done a good job to get this balance. So they open with against Fiji, which is this weekend, then South Africa, Portugal, and Australia.
Yeah.
So I would love to see more teams take this kind of approach, where one of the games is a tier two match that isn't Fiji, I guess.
Yeah.
So Wales, you know, they play Fiji. England, giving a match to Japan. Ireland haven't. France are playing Japan as well. So I do think you need, especially if you're going to play four, I think if you're going to play four massive games against really tough opposition, I think that's too much. I think if you're going to play four, at least one of them should be a game against Georgia, say, or in this case Portugal, whatever it might be. But I think that gives people something different, and especially if you're the fan, but one who can't afford maybe the 100 quid ticket, you will be getting cheaper tickets against the likes of Portugal, and that can be a really exciting opportunity because you fill the stand with a crowd who is really excited about that game.
I don't know how Scottish fans feel, but I would far rather be playing Portugal, then South Africa, then South Africa, then Portugal. I don't know. I don't know why. It spooks me that they could actually, you know, give it all against South Africa, get some bruised and broken bodies, not be able to put out as good a 15 against, you know, an upstart in Portugal, and lose two on the trot. I just can't get my head around that combination. But I think you're right. And Scotland, for me, are such an exciting side to watch. They have, for me, the Lions centre pairing. They are really, really, you know, great to involve themselves in as regards armchair viewing. They are a really exciting side with a lot of good stuff going on, and I think that's a great set of fixtures. And again, we shall know a lot more about Scotland at the end of November, early December than we did at the start, and that's what we need. That's what we want from these fixtures.
Yeah. And obviously, going on behind the scenes in these autumn tests, we have a load of games from with the more minor nations. So I'm just going to pick out one of those.
You're calling France a minor nation?
I wouldn't, not including France in that.
Although actually, I think you said it. Right, front page news. Lana calls France minor nation.
I am famously hateful of France, as we know. So the first one of those is Belgium versus Switzerland. So two Frenchies or half Frenchies.
On form at the moment, calling Belgium and Switzerland Frenchies. They'll love that. Oh, we've lost all our bloody European listeners now. Lana, what are you doing?
my apologies to the Flemish and German speaking communities of both nations. They go head to head this Saturday. The following weekend, there's a whole slate. You could fill your entire day with rugby watching if you so wished. But the one I would pick out here is Spain Uruguay, that is the kind of potentially the last couple of nations who would qualify for the World Cup. I mean, Spain would have qualified for the last two had they not completely messed up their admin. The week after that, Hong Kong, Brazil in Hong Kong. Again, you know, Niamey Gyasi have qualified for the World Cup, but they are on the up, I would say, both of them. Certainly ones to watch there. And then we can finish it off with a let's go for the a Romania Uruguay. Okay. Oh, actually, a Georgia Tonga as well.
Oh, yeah.
In Tbilisi. So that, the, you know, these are such exciting games because they're generally close, which is, you know, really what we want to see. And I would encourage people to seek them out. Normally, they're on somewhere on YouTube that you can find them.
I love this. I think we've really done a wonderful job for our listeners. I'm imagining now, you know, November, husband and wife conversations. Darling, you watching the rugby? Yes. Hong Kong versus Brazil is on. You'll have to excuse me for 2 hours. Oh, okay. You know, I think we're doing a good job. I think everyone is now well equipped to make their way through November. Wall-to-wall rugby every weekend. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm sure you've said things that you disagree with. I'm sure you can take issue with us. Please do. Please take to social media with indignation and write to us both. And I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you're looking forward to the Autumn Internationals as well. Thank you once again, Sam. Another really good episode of the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast.